This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon to guide you through the action this week. So much to get through. Thank you so much for tuning in once more. Mark, lots of tipping later on in the show, but let's start with the Carabao Cup. Last week on the episode, you seemed incredibly jolly. Are you still in that jubilant mood, considering your team's being dumped out by Chelsea?
I'd given up on the tie, from a psychological point of view. After
you hadn't given up. Don't give me that.
I had, in terms of I was over the defeat, and I was quickly over the defeat last night. Chelsea, again, just completely controlled the match. You know, I think Spurs obviously had the two disallowed penalties and the offside goal, all correctly ruled out by VAR, and you know, I think Chelsea got a little bit sloppy at times, but there was a huge gulf between the two teams over the 180 minutes. You know, Chelsea fully deserved their place in the final. It looks like a competition that Thomas Tuchel is, you know, pretty determined now, I think, to go on and win. It's a, you know, they've had to survive, haven't they? A couple of penalty shootouts earlier on, and in the tournament, it didn't look like it was anywhere near his sort of top of the priorities, but they're in a final, and you know, they'll be favourites to win the final, because whoever gets through, you know, if Arsenal get through, then Chelsea will be favourites. If Liverpool get through, I suspect that Klopp will stick with this mix and match team, probably a little bit stronger than he has in the past, but he's never shown any huge desire for the domestic knockout competition. So, you know, Tuchel's won a Champions League, and he'll fancy his chances of adding the Carabao Cup.
Now, I must say, I didn't watch the game in full. I was watching the bigger game in London on Wednesday evening between West Ham and Norwich. So I was shocked to see this question coming from Dave. Dave asked, Mark, is Conte already a beaten man at Tottenham? I mean, it's not that bad, is it?
No. I think this is more a reaction that you know, Conte was fairly down, I suppose, post-match. And this is a different job for Antonio Conte. I don't think he is a beaten man at Spurs. No. I think he realised the task at hand. Don't forget, he turned them down in the summer. So when he sort of, you know, replaced Nuno, what was that, beginning of November? I think he knew what was, you know, what needed to be done. I think it sort of in the recent press conferences where he has been a bit down after sort of the first leg, particularly. I think that's just all about making sure that the club know that, you know, fully need, you know, he's supported in terms of the transfer market to bring in better players, because the ones that came in last night and against Morecambe on Sunday, they're not bad names on paper. I don't think, yeah, a lot of them would probably find homes at other Premier League teams, but they've been disappointing now at the end of the Pochettino reign, then the Mourinho one, the Nuno one, and for Conte. You know, Tottenham burned 100 million really with Ndombele and Lo Celso. They need, it's going to cost them quite a bit of money to sort of just write off a lot of that. But it's the only way, because I think those two legs against Chelsea just showed, and I know Chelsea are European champions, but you know, Tottenham would be looking to sort of jostle for a top four spot with Chelsea. But on the evidence of those two games, you know, they're a long way off, and Conte doesn't want to be at that level.
Let's act like we can time travel momentarily. Let's skip to the end of the season and we're sat down recording the podcast. And I say to you, oh, it's been a successful season for Tottenham, Mark. What would it take for that to be the case?
Well, top four. Top four will be...
Is that the sole aim now?
Well, they're still in the FA Cup. But when you look at the FA Cup, you see Man City, you see Liverpool, you see Chelsea... you know, it's really difficult to win even the domestic cup. So I think it's all about, really, can they finish in the top four this season? They're in a really good position to do that, despite the issues. I don't think Conte wants to be managing in the Europa League for too long. So I think, you know, top four is what it's all about, really, you know, for Spurs. And that's a bit of a defeatist attitude, isn't it, when, you know, you think, oh, you'd rather win a cup competition than finish in the top four. But just for the sort of the long-term prospects of, you know, keeping Harry Kane happy, keeping the manager happy. You know, I think top four is the be all and end all really for Spurs.
Excellent. Of course, we've got Liverpool against Arsenal on Thursday evening. Well worth a look at Racing Post Sport website for all of the up-to-date analysis on that one. I'm keen to talk about transfers with you, Mark, and I'd love to start with Newcastle. It's been a fascinating week for them. Kieran Trippier and Chris Wood brought in. I think we can all get our heads around Kieran Trippier. Seems like a relatively shrewd signing. The Chris Wood signing has split opinion somewhat. Now, where are you standing with this? Because for me, it feels like a relatively sensible transfer. In Newcastle's situation, it wouldn't particularly make sense for any other club. But Newcastle have got the money. They've now severely hampered the survival chances of a fellow struggler. And they've got themselves a player who will probably score a few goals.
I agree. I mean, I certainly wouldn't be mocking the transfer. I know that there was all talk of Aubameyang, wasn't there? And sort of, you know, Mbappe and all of this kind of stuff. I mean, that's down the line for Newcastle. You know, in 3, 4, maybe 5 years' time, you know, they might have, well, it looks like they will have that financial power, you know, to be able to make sort of Man City and Chelsea-like signings. So, you know, that's one, you know, that's one part of the job. But they've only got one target. You asked about Tottenham's targets for this season. I mean, after the defeat to Cambridge, Newcastle have got one target, and that's to make sure they don't finish in 18th, 19th or 20th in the Premier League this season. I agree it hampers Burnley. It does give Burnley the opportunity, I suppose, to go out and spend that money and maybe improve the team. Kiefer Moore's being linked, isn't he, as one of those. But I think from Newcastle's point of view, I can see why they've signed Chris Wood. You know, Trippier can put the ball on his head. You know, he's sort of got that Premier League experience. I think that Premier League experience is potentially overrated a little bit, but it felt to me like a pretty sensible signing. Newcastle are not going to be able to attract you know, massive talent at this stage. You know, Trippier was slightly different. I think he wanted to move back to the north of England, concede a sort of bigger picture long term. You know, he just won La Liga in Spain, so he's probably, you know, feeling like he's not coming towards the end of his career, but he can see sort of himself being at Newcastle and, you know, that sort of playing out the rest of his life and, you know, playing football-wise anyway. And, you know, he can be comfortable, you know, living in an area relative to where he sort of was previously. And, you know, I think family life will be happy. So I can see the Trippier signing, but I think the signings for the rest of January, you don't want to be signing, I don't think, sort of 19-year-old Brazilians or, you know, that can wait. I mean, we have had Charlie sort of on asking, would Newcastle win the veterans Premier League? But I mean, I think that I think it's pretty sensible stuff so far from Newcastle. I wouldn't be against what they've done. You know, it's not the Aubameyang or anything like that. But I like I said, I think that was completely out of the reckoning, anything like that in January. We had the poll on Racing Post Sport, Jack, running this week in terms of which new signings would make the biggest improvement to their respective teams. And we've got Trippier and Wood, and we've got Coutinho and Dean at Aston Villa. And I actually voted, I went with the fewer votes, but I went for Trippier and Wood simply because I think that, you know, in terms of improvement, this is what Mick tweeted in, said that the poor Newcastle squad will be improved vastly by these signings. And that was the question rather than who are the better players. And I totally agree. You know, if you think how, like, who would Newcastle play up front, you know, with Wilson injured? They've got absolutely nobody up front. And Trippier obviously is an improvement on the right-hand side. When I look at the Villa signings, you know, I think that Coutinho is a bit of a vanity signing, and it might work, it might not, but I don't feel like he massively improves them in an area where they were desperately short. I think Dean's a sort of a bigger upgrade, I suppose, because, you know, Target's just a solid left back, isn't he, really? But not somebody if you want to sort of really kick on. But I actually think that Newcastle have made two, like I say, relatively, you know, good signings, certainly sensible signings. And I think until I see who Burnley bring in, it does weaken Burnley. There's no doubt about that. I mean, maybe they will bring in better players, but they haven't yet. And so, I'd go for Newcastle sort of doing okay in the transfer market.
And it certainly feels, Mark, certainly over the past, I don't know, 3-4 weeks, the kind of amount of teams with the possibility of going down has lessened to probably 4, maybe 5 if you include Brentford. So, you know, Newcastle will probably feel as if they've eradicated another of those slots. I mean, we're probably banking on Norwich City going down. Who else are we including? Watford, Burnley and Newcastle. Can you see anyone else being dragged in?
I can't really. I mean, I mean Leeds have still got quite a lot of injuries, but that win over Burnley felt absolutely massive. I mean, I think it is free from those 4 teams that you mentioned. I fully expect Watford to make some more sort of transfer moves, and that game, we'll cover it later. Newcastle against Watford. It's absolutely massive, isn't it, on Saturday? I know we're only in January, but it really does feel like a pivotal fixture for both teams.
Absolutely. Just back to whose point was it? Charlie on the Veterans Premier League. I don't know if you agree with me, Mark. Veterans football comes far too young. Was it 35 you can play veterans football?
Oh, is it? I don't know. But yeah, that does feel too young.
I mean, the fact that Wes Houlihan was tearing apart Newcastle's defence at the age of 39 on Sunday. I mean, you can't have Wes rocking up to veterans football, can you?
Well, no. Could you imagine that on a gentle Saturday in sort of in East Anglia?
Well, there's an Anglian combination veterans. I think there's Cringleford United, who have a front three of Darren Huckabee, Ewan Roberts and Grant Holt. I mean, imagine rocking up slightly hungover on a Sunday to be told you're marking Darren Huckabee, who's still running sort of 40-minute 10Ks. It feels a saddening experience.
And it feels quite a nice balance, doesn't it, there? You've got your two target men flicking it on for Huckabee running in behind. No, you wouldn't want to be sort of the 55-year-old granddad playing centre-half. No, that's for sure.
I remember we spoke about the Epsom Eagles back in the day, didn't we? Epsom Eagles against Cringleford United would be a very good matchup. Right, let's get on to our match of the day this week. Saturday, 12:30, sees Manchester City taking on Chelsea. This feels as if it's last chance saloon for Chelsea in terms of the title race, Mark.
I would have thought so, yeah. They need to win, don't they, to stand any chance. I mean, they probably know that it's all over anyway, really, you know, if you're thinking realistically. 10 points behind, suppose if you get it back to 7 and, you know, you hope that Liverpool maybe can beat City, but it really does feel like a must win fixture for Chelsea, who actually, if you look at the Premier League table, they're only 6 points ahead of West Ham. I know that we just assume that they're going to, you know, definitely finish in the top 4, and I certainly would be of that opinion. But actually, in terms of the league table,
it's quite clustered up there now, isn't it?
It is, but Tottenham obviously got quite a few games in hand, and so there are a couple of teams that are just not as far behind Chelsea as what you would just sort of imagine. You know, if someone said to you, how many points are there between Chelsea and West Ham, and you hadn't looked at the table for a few weeks, you'd be going double figures, wouldn't you? And
it's not
at that sort of distance. So Chelsea have got to be slightly wary. I mean, West Ham, for instance, we will get to their game, but they've got Leeds at home. Chelsea have got City away. I mean, the sort of obvious conclusion to draw from that is that that sort of advantage could be halved come the end of the weekend. And, you know, Tottenham have got Arsenal, so one of them teams, you know, if one of them team wins, then that they can sort of narrow the gap as well. So it feels like quite a big game for Chelsea. Like I said, I do think they'll finish in the top 4. It was just sort of when I was looking at the table, I hadn't quite realised how clustered it had got there. I think when I'm looking at this game, though, I do think that Chelsea have got a reasonable chance. As good as anybody, really, in terms of playing Manchester City. They've got a good record against them. They were outplayed in the Premier League game at Stamford Bridge earlier on this season. But apart from that, you know, knocked them out of the FA Cup last season, beat them a couple of times. Obviously, Champions League final, you know, was another sort of memorable occasion for Chelsea, who, like I say, I've got a lot of what you need, I think, to beat Man City. You know, defend well, they can keep possession and sort of play through that Man City press. And a lot of teams really struggle with that. But Chelsea, with Kovacic and Jorginho, players like that in midfield, the quality on the ball of Thiago Silva and Christensen in the defensive third, they can play through it. And then if you can't play through via passing, they've got, you know, either Lukaku and or Timo Werner, you know, for the ball over the top. So I think that this is, you know, a game and a matchup where Chelsea will fancy their chances, despite being 9-2, of getting something from the game. And I feel like they're getting their players back. You know, they were really good against Liverpool, outplayed Tottenham. I'm sort of thinking along the lines here of Chelsea or draw double chance for this game. I certainly wouldn't be putting Man City in the Akers. I know a lot of people don't like to put the 12:30 game in the Akers anyway, but you know, they'll be probably better 7-10 shots and safer 7-10 shots, I would have thought, you know, this season rather than Man City.
I recall you a few weeks ago, Mark, and you were really unlucky, actually, putting up, I think it was Arsenal double chance when they were at the Emirates playing Manchester City. Yeah. And City, you know, just about got through that game with a 93rd minute goal. What is it about Manchester City that's just putting you off backing them, you know, ever so slightly?
Well, they've won 11 in the row in the Premier League. So,
the form on paper is impeccable, isn't it?
Apart from that, you know, there are. I mean, you said they weren't, you know, it was unlucky against Arsenal. I mean, it was felt like a horrendously bad beat. I mean, Arsenal definitely shouldn't have lost that game. Man City, I thought, were really poor in that game. Didn't create a huge amount against Brentford. If you go back to the Newcastle game, I know that they eventually won that game really easily. But do you remember the penalty that Newcastle should have had? Edison, I can't remember who it was, but he clattered somebody. I mean, it was a definite penalty.
Odegaard, wasn't it? Odegaard, I think.
No. I'm talking about Newcastle.
I didn't
think that was a penalty against Odegaard, actually. But we don't want to go back over the old VAR debate and Atwell's performance on that day. You know, even back to Leicester. You know, Leicester scored 3 times against Man City and were creating chances against them. Wolves were 10 men. It was 1-0 and Wolves missed a chance late on. I think it was Kilman came up from the back and headed over. So, I mean, they're obviously the best team in the Premier League. They're the best team in Europe as well. But they're not going to win. They can't win every game from now until the end of the season. This is going to be one of their most difficult games, actually, if you think about it, in their whole season. And I think the break will have done them good because their squad, I mean, it's full of quality, but it's not packed with numbers. And you saw that with the FA Cup where they supposedly had all these COVID issues and the team was ridiculously strong because I don't think he hasn't really got that many other players. So I think the Christmas period maybe just caught them out a little bit just in terms of squad depth and numbers. And they're obviously favourites and they deserve to be odds on. But I just think 7-10 is on the verge of being a little bit too short against a very good Chelsea team.
Glimmer of hope for Chelsea. Let's whiz through the rest of the Premier League card. Friday night, Brighton against Crystal Palace. Palace have had a spicy few weeks, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've played a number of big games. They've been involved in a lot of, you know, high scoring matches. They had the Millwall FA Cup tie on Saturday that was always going to be, you know, a really big one for them. And I actually think that, you know, Crystal Palace here are a pretty interesting price. I think I'm going to go Palace or draw double chance in this instance. Well, maybe giving away my long shot here because I think that Palace are, you know, interesting on that market as well. But they've had 17 draws between them this season, so Brighton and Palace. So I think you have got to respect the chances of the draw, particularly since there's been 3 draws in the last 5 meetings. But you know, Palace have got, even despite the AFCON, they've got some really good players now. You know, I think they've recruited excellently in the summer. They've shopped well last couple of years in the Championship, brought a lot of the sort of best Championship players in. And Brighton are a good side themselves, obviously very well coached. I've said this quite a few times already on the podcast this season. Don't think they're playing to the same level that they did last year, even though the results have been better. And so I think that Palace have got a good chance around about 3-1. If you want to play it safe, then the draw or double chance.
You're spot on with the Championship recruitment from Crystal Palace. The performance of Michael Olise against Millwall was just so exciting. And I think that Palace fans, you know, they've got years of that to come. I really like what's going on.
They're not as reliant on, they don't feel like they're as reliant on Zaha. Like,
no, you know,
there was
the thing,
a time under Hodgson, and maybe that was just the way that he wanted to play it. And you know, he got the best out of Zaha doing that. But they don't feel like that one man team that they probably were, before Vieira came in over the summer.
Absolutely. Let's go on to Saturday's fixtures then. We've already previewed Manchester City against Chelsea, so we'll move on to Burnley against Leicester. How do you see this one playing out, Mark?
Well, I was looking at the draw for this game. I mean, Burnley obviously in a world of trouble. You know, they're in a horrendous league position. They have only lost twice at home. No Cornet. He's at AFCON. Big blow for them. Obviously, Chris Wood has departed, and they probably won't get anybody in before that. Certainly, it's not, you know, ready to go. So I don't really want to be back in Burnley. But you look at Leicester's injuries and AFCON sort of players at the moment. Vardy, Evans, Ricardo Pereira, Fofana, Amarte, Mendy, Iheanacho, and Didi. Wow. I mean, that's a lot of players to take out.
It's the whole team.
Yeah, and well, they've still got, you know, if Daka can recover from injury, Madison, obviously, and Tillemans, you know, they've still got that quality on the pitch that maybe is lacking in the Burnley side. But I don't know if I want to back them to win at Turf Moor. So with all of those players out, so I'm sort of sitting on the fence with a draw.
No, I don't blame you. I'm just looking down the card at the moment. I hope you disagree with me, but I'm just seeing draws left, right and centre here. Big one down at the bottom of the table this weekend. It's Newcastle against Watford. This is huge.
It is, yeah. I mean, we've obviously already touched on Newcastle. I thought both teams to score was the way to go this one. I mean, Watford have lost 10 of their last 12 matches in the Premier League. No clean sheet this season either in the Premier League. But they have scored in 6 of their last 7 Premier League defeats. And Newcastle have only had 1 clean sheet this season. So, I mean, both teams to score is about 4-6. So, you know, I'm not sort of giving away a sort of massive price one here. But it looks pretty solid. What I would say about Newcastle, and I think I was praising their sort of early transfer business. They need to bring in centre-backs. I mean, I just don't think their defence is good enough at all. Wasn't under Bruce, doesn't look like it is under Eddie Howe. And so until they get that position sorted, I think really I'd be looking to back at least the other team to score, whoever they're playing, really.
No Premier League goals since November for Norwich City. Everton, the travellers to Carrow Road this weekend. Another big game, I guess, towards the bottom of the table with Everton struggling.
Yeah, I mean, Norwich, despite the fact that they've not scored in 6 and, you know, keep losing, they're still within touching distance of sort of
it's
the other teams.
It's remarkable, really. Yeah.
I mean, you would imagine, you know, if how many points have you got, Jack? About 10?
10 points. Know, three. Yeah, 3 points adrift.
Yeah, so, I mean, you would have imagined 10 points at this stage, you'd be done, but it's not the case. I mean, for this match, I was looking at under 2.5 goals. I think that, you know, Norwich have been really struggling to create and score, obviously, and have done all season long. And I don't massively trust Everton to be good enough to, you know, to carve open loads of opportunities in this game. I was thinking of sort of taking on the Toffees, but the price is probably about right. So that's why I went for the unders.
Yeah, more points than goals for Norwich City this season. Really struggling in front of the net. Wolves against Southampton.
Southampton on the Asian handicap. So you get a quarter of a goal start. So there's a slight profit here, even if it's a draw. You know, these are my 2 FA Cup fancies. So it's good to see them both get through and home draws in the fourth round. Wolves just a sort of team I like, probably at bigger prices. This is looks a difficult enough Premier League game. In their last 9 Premier League games, their average expected goals for is 0.55. So, you know, even when they dominated against Manchester United, that sort of whenever it was, the other Monday night, just feels like forever ago now. But, their expected goals were still only about 0.7, and they played really well. So they just don't create masses of opportunities. And I always think that leaves you vulnerable. Southampton, you know, easily dispatched Brentford in midweek. They were down to 10 men for a long time and were all over Swansea until they were down to 10 men, still managed to get through in the FA Cup. You know, two well-coached teams that are heading in the right direction. And I'd probably rather just take the draw on my side, which is why I'm going for Southampton.
If you want more of Aston Villa against Manchester United, fear not. You only have to wait until 5:30 on Saturday. What did you think of the game the other night between these two sides?
I thought Manchester United were horrendous. like, you can't believe they've won the game playing the way that they did. I'd laid Manchester United, so maybe I was watching it slightly sort of biased. Just really frustrated.
I don't think so. Yeah.
I was really frustrated with Aston Villa because they created chances, they created moments in the game. They just lacked, I don't know if it was a bit of composure, the final ball, the final pass, the final run was just a little bit off, and they had so many chances, like before the chance, if you know what I mean. Like they had overloads and they'd overhit the pass, or, you know, the cross wouldn't come in when they had loads of spare men. There was the Watkins chance that he really, I think, should have scored as well. The close VAR decisions. Manchester United were just so bad. At least under Solskjaer, it was chaotic and dysfunctional, and you know they weren't well coached. But there was, I think, the players just liked Ole and were sort of, you know, just getting involved for him as much as anything else. They're not having Rangnick. There's no doubt about that. He can't get his ideas across to them. Obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo probably be back for this game, and they need him. And there was a big debate earlier on, wasn't there, about whether Ronaldo's the problem at Manchester United. If he was the problem at Manchester United, then why are they not playing better when he's not there? Would be my sort of question to that one, because they don't press well when he's not there. Rashford completely lost all confidence, and I don't think he's almost forgotten how to be a sort of, you know, Premier League footballer. The midfield, I think McTominay and Fred get a lot of criticism. Probably the only part of the team that seems to be working well at the moment. And, you know, the full-backs are not defending particularly well, not creating much going the other way. They look really nervous, whoever plays at centre-half. And he can't seem to get the right combination up front. In 6 matches under Rangnick, no more than 1 goal in sort of 6 of those 7 games, sorry. So I think there's big problems at Manchester United. That is reflected in the odds. What, they're about 6-4 to win at Villa Park. But I think that Villa can win this game. I think as long as they play like they did at Old Trafford, I think sort of 2-1 plus is fair enough.
They're an intriguing case, Manchester United, aren't they? Because I think we're all maybe a bit guilty of just looking at that side and going, well, there's quality there and there's quality there. But can you actually kind of name a list of maybe 5 players you've had a consistent run of good form this season? I mean, Fernandes hasn't been great. Cavani hasn't kind of put performances together. Yes, Ronaldo's Ronaldo, but there's kind of critiques around the way he goes about business. I mean, is there probably as much quality in that side as we perceive?
I mean, probably De Gea been maybe the most consistent player this season. I mean,
a worry. I mean, he's the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Varane has had injuries. I don't think Varane's been terrible when he's played, but, you know, the bar's been set low. I think sort of, like I say, McTominay and Fred get a lot of criticism because they're not as good as Roy Keane and some of the other players that Manchester United have had in the past. But I think if you were saying, like, who's the consistent performers, I think it's probably sort of those two. I mean, you know, Sancho barely been seen. I think Fernandes has been really poor this season. Greenwood in and out. Don't think he's quite stepped up to as quickly as what maybe a few people had suggested. So, I mean, Ronaldo scored his goal. So, I mean, from that point of view, he's been consistent. But no, that they're in a big old battle, I think, for top four. Something's got to change. And if it doesn't, I don't see him getting top four.
And they just can't get away from the Fergie days, seemingly. There's every single game they're on telly. They will cut to Alex Ferguson's kind of reactions to a goal or a VAR decision just like four or five times a game. It's just so, I don't know, they just need to kind of move on a little bit, it feels.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they tried that. That didn't work. And so then they went back sort of with Ollie. And now they're trying something else. I think ultimately they're going to need to get in a real top level manager, and they're not easy to come by. I mean, we spoke about Conte at the top of the show. I mean, would they have just been better off bringing him in? I think he would have been better, probably suited to the Man United situation than he was the Tottenham one. But I think Villa, despite the fact they haven't really got anything to play for now this season after getting knocked out of the FA Cup, I think they would take great hope from what they did for large parts of that game at Old Trafford. And, Coutinho probably make his debut. There'll be a buzz around that. And, they've got a fair chance.
Yeah, I guess it's all about betting them new signings in now. Kahuna tweeted us to say that he's back Coutinho for a goal at Old Trafford. I don't think we can put him off that. I really enjoyed Steven Gerrard's comments. I think he was asked about, the boos and did it affect him? And he just came back with, well, I've been to louder stadiums. There's still a bit of needle in there, isn't there? Which is enjoyable to watch from a distance.
It is, yeah. And I think he's laid the foundations now and it's time to kick on. I'm not mad on the Coutinho signing, I have to say. But I'll be proved wrong because, I would like to see him get back to his best, but I don't think he's shown that for just so many years now. I just don't know if it's gone completely.
Time will tell. Let's move on to Sunday's fixtures. Liverpool-Brentford kicks things off at 2:00. How will Liverpool be affected by the African Cup of Nations, Mark?
Well, I think that they obviously will be with Mane and Salah, the two sort of big ones that are missing, which is why I'm going for a routine rather than a rout. So Liverpool to win 2-0. Brentford have conceded at least twice on their last six Premier League away games. I'm not mad on their goalkeeper that's coming to replace David Raya. I have to say that. And I just think that, they'll get beat by Liverpool. But Liverpool playing against Arsenal on the Thursday, then again the next Thursday in the League Cup semi-finals, it's one of them where if they get in front, there's no need to keep running around like crazy, because the games are still coming really quickly for them and their squad is stretched. Until we see what team he puts out on Thursday night, quite difficult to work it out.
I'm going to keep delivering the same question in the hope that you'll one day give me an answer that I want to hear. Any fears around Brentford and being dragged into the relegation zone?
I don't think so.
Thumped by Southampton in the week.
They were, but they've already... They're already, I think, significant way away from sort of those teams at the bottom. I mean, how many wins have you got? Sort of, so we're going to need two teams from Newcastle, Watford, and Burnley to really kick on. I just don't see it. I mean, they haven't won that many games between them this season, have they? So, it's hard to suddenly think that they're going to completely leave the first half of their campaign well behind.
West Ham back into the top four after their win over Norwich City in the week. They take on Leeds at the London Stadium on Sunday. Can you see another victory for the Hammers here?
Yeah, I can. I mean, and I thought that the odds, maybe not getting the full respect they deserve. West Ham, I was a bit surprised they put out a really strong team in the FA Cup, but David Moyes obviously does fancy a bit of a go at it. They've got Kidderminster in round four, so they should be able to get through to the next stage. I think that the problem comes for West Ham once they get back into the Europa League with the Thursday-Sunday action. As it is, don't really, they weren't massively troubled by Norwich. won the game comfortably enough, 2-0. I just think that they're at the moment, with Leeds' injuries, just quite a bit better than Leeds. So, yeah, I'll go for a West Ham win.
It's a brilliant weekend of football that concludes with Spurs against Arsenal on Sunday at 4:30. Which way do you see this one going, Mark? It's another intriguing clash.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going Tottenham draw no bet, purely because I think that not enough has been made of home advantage in this game, really. There's only been two away wins in the last 28 Premier League North London derbies. They've got one win each in that spell. Arsenal's last seven visits to White Hart Lane, been five Tottenham wins and two draws. I think that this Arsenal team is on the up, quite clearly on the up, but they still haven't landed that notable sort of away success, have they? You know, and until they do, I think it's quite difficult to sort of trust them to do that. And, you know, they've got this big game on Thursday in the Carabao Cup, a big opportunity, against Liverpool. Tottenham felt to me like they rested some players on Wednesday. You know, Lloris was rested. I think Skip was rested. They didn't risk Dyer or Reguilón. So that sort of goes back to my thinking that maybe Tottenham knew that game was done. It's sort of, you know, was it about sort of 6-4 Tottenham, 2-1 Arsenal? I just felt that maybe Spurs would be a little bit shorter because of home advantage. I think Son's absence is obviously a big one for Tottenham, but home advantage is worth a lot in these derbies, as we saw in the reverse fixture when Arsenal completely outplayed Tottenham and fully deserved the victory. I don't think it'll be that comprehensive this time around. I think it'll be a very tight match, but I still, you know, Liverpool couldn't win at Tottenham. Man City were beaten at Spurs this season. So it's not an easy place for Arsenal to go and actually get the win. So I thought that Tottenham might have been slightly stronger favourites.
What are you like as a football fan, Mark? Are you a nervy fan?
Yes, I am.
Kind of just not much conversation, sort of edge of your seat stuff.
Yes, I don't. Yeah. I'm not a big singer, not a big... chatter during a game. Well, quite often if I'm at home, we'll just watch it with the sound off.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the kids and wife know not to sort of come in the room. I'll quite often just pretend I'm sort of standing on the touchline, just stand near the TV, just sort of watching the action unfold. Yeah, I much prefer that. The only time it's not like that is if I've had about 10 pints before the game.
So what, you go complete silence, or do you put the sort of classic FM on us?
Oh, no, really? No, the complete silence. Yeah, I don't have that, you know, split screen where you're following what people are saying on Twitter or, you know, anything like that. No, I just watch
just
the game.
Just fully immersed.
Yeah, I just watch the game and I'm sort of sweating after the 90 minutes. I feel like I've played the game. Yeah, I do get quite intense, particularly for these, you know, the big sort of North London derby being one of those.
Thoughts with the Langdon household this weekend then. One of my favourite moments from in the week came at the Madejski Stadium, where Andy Carroll scored two absolute screamers that were disallowed, of course, in the EFL. Let's cover that now with Dan Childs.
Now we're joined by Dan Childs to talk all things EFL, and also there's a non-league question for you, Childsy. So I'll start with that one. Colin has tweeted in, said he wanted to pick Dan's brains out over the National League, given it polarises opinion. Colin says he fancies Notts County. I know, Dan, that this is not a league that you cover as much as you did sort of in previous years, but have you had a look? Anyone you fancy outright?
Well, I'd say Colin's on the right track, because I've actually, after a lot of deliberation, I've come to the conclusion that Notts County are the value. But I mean, it is a real bun fight. I mean, you look at it, there's 8 points covering the top eight teams. I'm looking at the league, had a look at the contenders. I've really only narrowed it down to six, real possible contenders. The bookies, you know, seem to think the same. There's six teams all at single figure quotes for the title. I mean, Notts County are 7-1, and I'll get to why I think they're a good value bet in a moment. But I mean, you look at Halifax are top of the league on 47 points. They're actually fifth in the betting at 8-1. There's a lot of you know, it's the waters are muddied a lot by the fact that you've got teams with a lot of games in hand. Halifax have played three games more than Chesterfield and Bournemouth, who are second and third. They've got three games in hand of the leaders. I mean, they've all got the Chesterfield are the favourites. I think they're probably worthy favourites looking at the games in hand that they've got. They've got a striker who played at MK Dons, Kabongo Shimanga, who's the top scorer in the league with 18 goals, and they're in good form, Chesterfield. So I can understand, you know, why, you know, they're well fancied. But then you've got teams like Stockport and Wrexham that are down at seventh and eighth, that are big clubs, in good form and with big budgets as well. You think of Stockport, that they beat Bolton in the FA Cup, you know, a memorable victory there. And Wrexham, with their kind of big money behind them, brought in the likes of Paul Mullin from Cambridge, you know, to play out front. Ben Tozer, who was the captain at Cheltenham, they brought in to play at the back. So there's so many contenders there. But the reason, just getting back to why I fancy Notts County, I just think they're sitting there in fourth place at the moment on 41 points. You know, so they're only 6 points off the leaders with two games in hand. I like the fact as well that unlike, you know, say Chesterfield, who have got one player scoring all the goals, Notts County have kind of got three attackers there that are all capable of scoring. Ruben Rodriguez with eight goals, Roberts with eight goals, and Kyle Wootton, their top scorer, with 12 goals. So I like the fact, you know, if they kind of lose a player, maybe somebody comes in and buys a player in the January window, they're still going to have other options there to get the goal. So Notts County, in a tight race, look a bit of value to me at 7-1.
And Andy has asked, he says, I followed Dan's Asian handicap tip of Fulham to beat Reading in midweek. There's no doubt over that one winning, Dan. But Andy wants to know, when do you recommend betting on the Asian handicap? Is it with short price teams, or have you got anything else? I mean, I tend to do a lot of my betting Asian handicap. I don't know if you're the same, Dan.
No, it can be any, you know, number of, you know, it could be short price teams or bigger price teams that you just think are going to do better than the market anticipates. So I think with those short price ones, what you've got to be a confident that the teams are going to win. But if you, it's a kind of a way of bumping up the price for somebody that may maybe say, like, you know, 5-1 on, and you know, you don't want to be backing them just on the match result. So you're then looking at how can I bump the price up, but you've got to be confident that they're a team that scores a lot of goals and are liable to get a heavy victory. I mean, Fulham is a good team to choose because they do score a lot of goals, a lot of attacking options. Maybe avoid teams like, for example, Tranmere in League Two, who are used to, you know, winning a lot of games but a lot of low scoring wins. They probably wouldn't be a team you would be rushing to back, you know, giving up a goal on the Asian handicap. The other side of that, you know, as I mentioned a bit earlier, at backing, you know, outsiders to go well. I mean, I think back to, you know, one earlier this season, I backed Mansfield away to Sunderland in the FA Cup first round. And it's not a game where you're thinking, you know, there's a very, very good chance they're going to win the game. They did win the game 1-0, as it turned out. But it's one of them where you think that they're a little bit overpriced, and so you want a little bit more insurance. So I backed them plus a goal start to Mansfield away to Sunderland. And, you know, they're leading 1-0, and then there's no dramas then if they can see the late goal. You're still going to, you know, cop your full winnings.
And just psychologically on that then, you don't feel gutted that, oh, you know, why did I not back Mansfield at, you know, 5-1 to win the game rather than even money with a goal start or whatever it is?
No, you've got to take a bit more of a balanced view than that. I mean, look, if, you know, anything can happen in a football match. And if Sunderland had equalised late on and you had backed them at a big price to win the game, you'd be saying the complete opposite, wouldn't you? Oh, yeah. God, why didn't I back them, you know, with the exactly. Insurance of the Asian? So, yeah, you... It's just a way of giving yourself a better chance, you know, of winning in that case. And in the case of when you're back in the shorties, just trying to, you know, boost those odds up a little bit more.
Sure. And then for this week, do you want to just spin through your best bets, please?
Yeah, I'm going to start off in the Championship. Blackburn, I think, are a really good bet, around 6-4 away to Cardiff. When you look at Cardiff, they're 25th from bottom in the Championship. But actually, if you took away the points deductions of Reading and Derby, they would actually be in the bottom three. So they're having a really poor season. They've improved a little bit under Steve Morrison. You know, put up in a few better performances initially, but they're actually on a game of the run of four league games now without a win, Cardiff. So they've kind of regressed again in the last few weeks. And Blackburn are on such a great run, 23 points in the last nine games. I mean, that's an unbeaten nine-game run since they lost 7-0 actually at home to Fulham before going on this amazing run. I mean, the last two away games in the Championship, they won at tough venues, won 1-0 away to Stoke, won 2-0 away to Bournemouth. Surely, you know, for me, I would fancy them against Cardiff. And don't forget, this game will be in a, you know, a stadium with no fans as well. And then I think you've got to factor that in. You look back to last weekend and Swansea lost 3-2 at home to Southampton in the FA Cup. And that game, Southampton without the 10 men for most of the match. You also look at the experience of Newport, who were at home to Salford, with no fans. The Newport played poorly in that game, lost 2-0. So I do think, and that's a small sample, but I do think we've had a lot of it, data from the Premier League when there was no fans and from the Bundesliga when there was no fans, that away teams do a lot better. And I think you've got to consider that, in cases, like this weekend with Cardiff and Blackburn.
And any other bets for the listeners?
Yep, got one for League One as well. I fancy Sheffield Wednesday at home to Plymouth. A game of ninth against seventh here in League One. Both teams going to be, pushing to get in those playoffs. Sheffield Wednesday, last two games have been a bit of a disaster. They lost 5-0 away to Sunderland and then followed up with a 1-0 loss away to Shrewsbury. But they've had a 13-day break then between then and now having to play home to Plymouth. I think that'll do them good, I think, just to kind of mentally refresh. They've got a very strong home record, only one loss in 10 home league games this season. I think they'll finish the season stronger than they started it. They've got a really strong squad, Sheffield Wednesday. And I just think it's probably a good time to play Plymouth at the moment. Had a bit of COVID, around sort of Christmas time. Their form has dropped a little bit. They won the last two league games. They beat Cheltenham, who were COVID affected, 1-0. And they won 2-0 at Cheltenham, who have been on a poor run. But I'm not so sure they're as good as they were earlier in the season. And they're going to miss Panuch Kamara, who's on AFCON duty. A lot of Plymouth fans say he's been excellent this season, a really influential attacking midfielder.
Two and done or any more?
No, one more I've got still. In League Two, we're going to go this time. And I fancy Stevenage at home to Sutton United. This is a game of 21st at home to 4th, but I do fancy the struggling side to get the job done. Stevenage have got Paul Tisdale in, an experienced manager, to try and improve their survival hopes. He's been very active in the market. He's brought in Michael Bostwick and Christy Pym from the league above. Luke O'Neill's come in, an experienced right back. Ed Upson's come in as well to boost the midfield. All four of those players made their debuts in a really good 3-1 win at home to Walsall last weekend. I think they're going to really influence Stevenage's hopes of staying up. And I think they'll be maybe just have the edge over Sutton, who are having a great season, first season in the Football League, but they have lost 3 of their last 4 away games.
Thanks very much to Dan for his insight. As always, you can read more from him in the Racing Post and on the Racing Post Sport website. Let's get an overview now then of Mark's best bets from the week. I think we've had questions in once more regarding the Ben Davis fan club becoming quite popular. Mark, we'll get onto them questions later. But what are we going with in the prop shop this week?
Yeah, so we had Timo Werner last week at 9-2, obliged from about half a metre out. This week, slightly bigger prices, but anytime goal scorers Tarkowski and Ben Mee for Burnley, 13-1 and 16-1 respectively. We've spoken earlier on in the season about Leicester not being very good defending set pieces. They've conceded 11 goals from them. I mean, one place where that will get absolutely tested is Burnley. And I think the most amazing stat that I've sort of dug up on Burnley is that they've had 72 corners this season. That's not particularly amazing. But they've had 70 in-swinging corners and two and two straight. They've not had one outswinger all season long. Now, Liverpool have had 108 outswinging corners. You can see the different approach to how teams think the best way to score a goal is from a corner.
Burnley, what kind of conclusion are we pulling from that stat then?
That Burnley are going to put Kasper Schmeichel under all sorts of pressure. Okay. They're going to block him. They're going to put it on his head at every single opportunity. And they're going to just go in with Tarkowski and Ben Mee, but chipped in with goals already. Burnley have got issues in terms of who's going to score their goals. I think a set piece feels as likely as any other way, for them to get on the target.
I must say, I didn't know you could find out the kind of format of the corner. And obviously, knew you could find out corner numbers, but excites me.
Yeah, I mean, you can have a world of fun looking at that.
Yeah, no, I'm sure I'll get onto that this evening. You flirted with your long shot earlier. Just give it away now, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that on a weekend where I was really struggling to find anything too big in terms of 90 minutes, you know, we had Boreham Wood last week at 3-1. Hopefully Crystal Palace at the same price can go in. I just, you know, that they should have won the reverse fixture, got mugged in the injury time, didn't they? Brighton, virtually last kick of the game. You mentioned Elise. And sort of the impact he can have. I thought Palace were unlucky against West Ham when they lost 3-2. I mean, they were 3-0 down. They hadn't really played that badly. They've got goals in them, you know, now. And I think they've got a reasonable chance, got a very good record against Brighton. And, you know, why not at sort of around about 3-1?
How about a treble for this weekend?
Yeah, so Leipzig to beat Stuttgart. Leipzig are second in expected goals in the Bundesliga this season. Then both teams are scoring. Serie A, Sassuolo against Verona. Both teams have scored in 14 of Sassuolo's last 15 matches. And I'm going to put West Ham in to beat Leeds. I actually don't think the Hammers are getting maybe the respect their sort of run of sort of form over what the last 18 months or so sort of deserves.
And your strongest bet for the weekend, what's the nap?
Yeah, I'm going to play it down this week. I was struggling for a really strong one, but Leipzig creating a lot of chances, and that bodes well against a Stuttgart team that haven't scored in their last four games.
Let's get some questions from the audience. Always my favourite part of the show. Mark, let's start with the African Cup of Nations. Now, I would be lying if I told you I've been glued to the television for each game. You did sell it to me on last week's episode, so I have tuned in for a couple. I have been entertained for those that I have watched. I keep referring back to a tweet that came in from Beesh last week, who mentioned the unders and the no for both teams to score. Now, I looked at that and thought, maybe has a chance. I didn't know the kind of historic data of past African Cup of Nations. And you were keen on it as well. And I think every single game, bar one, it would have clicked in.
Yeah, well, every single game, bar the opener, Cameroon 2, Burkina Faso 1, has been under 1.5 goals, never mind.
Remarkable.
Under 2.5 goals. It's been a tournament, obviously, where there just haven't been. There's been a lot of talking points. There haven't been many goals so far. And that was my main point about, do you want to back the sort of the big teams? Because it's historically been a tournament of very few goals. And you imagine getting to the knockout stages where, you know, the goal sort of expectancy is going to be below 2. And that means penalties and extra time and just one error and you could be out, which is why I was always sort of looking to take on the bigger teams. I mean, from a quality sort of perspective, you'd hope now that Senegal got that first win under their belt, they can sort of kick on. You know, they needed every minute of the 97 or 98 was against Zimbabwe to get that 1-0 with a penalty. Ivory Coast 1-1-0, Algeria 0-0 with Sierra Leone, and our boys Mali, the ones we had a few bob on, that they managed to beat was it Tunisia 1-0 in a
big win. Mark,
but a remarkable game, of course, because we've had a few questions in from Ted being the most prominent, and you know, he wants to know about the AFCON timekeeping. Of course, truly astonishing where the arbiter blew up after 84 minutes and then 89 minutes. I mean, Tunisia are trying to get that whole match replayed. I will not be happy if they win that sort of legal battle, because I mean, you know, you've had people go, oh, it was as if it was some kind of fix, right? Now, the people that say that, and it's been all over sort of Twitter about you know, the referee being bent and all of this stuff, Jack. I mean, who was he trying to benefit? Because he'd sent off a Mali player incorrectly. He'd given a penalty against Mali, and then he's blown up before the full-time whistle, you know, before the full-time whistle should have been. So he wasn't even, if he wanted Mali to win, he wouldn't have given the penalty and the red card. If he wanted, you know, Tunisia to somehow launch a comeback, then he wouldn't have blown up early. I mean, just obviously sheer incompetence. It sounds like he maybe didn't stop his watch when they went for the water break and then got confused when they said there's 5 minutes still to go. And he just added the 5 minutes on rather than, you know, the fact that his watch was at 90, but the full one was at sort of nearly 85. And so he just added on another 5 minutes, which got him to 90, but then he's forgotten about injury time. So, you know, obviously incompetent, but if anyone from AFCON is listening, do not replay that game.
No, we're fully on board with the Mali bandwagon. Now, I feel as if they do, you know, go on and win the tournament, we should use a chunk of our winnings to buy a Mali replica shirt and maybe wear them into the office.
Freddie Canute on the back.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah. And Matt was asking, you know, he was saying he's been watching all the games, he's isolating. So he's a misfortune of not only isolating, but also watching all of AFCON. And he wants to know how far you have to go down the list of rankings, you know, for a European side, I suppose, that wouldn't win AFCON, which I think home advantage would be really interesting because if you think about it, it would be hard, I think, for a European team to maybe win in Cameroon, for instance, you know. So I do think that we have to take into consideration the weather, the pitches and stuff like that, which doesn't make it easy for any of these teams and players to be able to produce their best football. But in terms of that question, I think one way to look at it is to go, you know, just by looking at sort of the World Cup odds. And so there's a bunch of African teams around about 250-1, Algeria, Morocco, Senegal, laughably Ivory Coast as well, 250-1. Any bookmakers that have got Ivory Coast in there, please take them out. They've already been eliminated. But around about the sort of 250-1 mark, you've got Serbia and Sweden. I was sort of going down the world rankings. Czech Republic are 32nd in the world. I think they would sort of, you know, neutral venue, I'd fancy them to beat most of the African teams, I think. So I'd go down to about Czech Republic.
And last AFCON question. I know you answered this last week, but I'm still... What is the reasoning behind just the so few goals in this tournament?
I don't really know. I've sort of been reading sort of different opinions on it. I mean, the pitch definitely doesn't... Not all of the pitches are, you know, Wembley, let's put it that way. I think... as well,
but surely that also makes it more difficult to defend on.
Yeah, but you just can't. I think that maybe, I mean, I think that first of all, it's much easier for coaches to coach defence rather than attack. If you only get the players together just before a tournament starts, you can't be working on pressing and, you know, all of these pretty passing patterns. You get a team, you make them solid defensively, you don't lose the game, and then you hope to nick something. And I think there's probably that attitude. I've also read some stuff saying that the westernization of African football has been to the detriment of African football, where, you know, that kind of cliche sort of, oh, they're too attacking and, you know, they're too naive and all of this kind of stuff that was thrown at them, you know, I suppose probably from, if you go back to sort of Cameroon at Italia 90 and stuff like that, that they've gradually, too many of the African teams have actually gone away from their roots and sort of their own philosophy and tried to become like European teams. And some of them have obviously appointed European coaches or sort of technical directors, and that maybe they've just gone too far down one avenue. I wouldn't know the answer, but I mean, that feels at least an interesting point, I think.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's a nice point. Julian, we don't go an episode now without talking about Ben Davis, so we might as well continue. What's the general strategy when picking big price goal scorer bets? Consistently back the same pick over a medium to long period. Thinking of Ben Davis, who's had a few close runs but hasn't yet copped. What do you reckon, Mark?
Yeah, so I mean, Ben Davis nearly scored against Morecambe, didn't he? Had the flicked header that went over. The Tottenham tweet said Davis flicked header just over bar or something like that. That was at 0-0. Yes, it is. Yeah, it is to go with the same person over a medium to long term. I think you have to be prepared to dump them. And, you know, if it looks like it's no longer happening for them in terms of creating chances. And I know that will then be gutting if they do then score a couple of games later. But, you have to, you know, you can't just blindly go in for the next 200 games hoping that they'll score. You know, if it looks like they're not, if the chances dry up, if the style of play changes, then you just have to bin them off, and that's just part of it. Just in terms of first goal scorer betting strategy, one thing I do is bet to win a certain amount. So, I mean, let's just say it was to win, say £100. You'd have £3 on Ben Davis at 33-1. If it was a 10-1 shot like Youri Tielemans, you'd have a tenner. And so that's how I sort of control the staking in terms of bet to win a certain amount rather than level stakes on all of these players, because obviously big difference between a 9-2 shot and, you know, 33-1 shot.
Oh, nice little tip for our audience there. Good stuff. Andy wants to know the next Premier League manager you think will go.
Claudio Ranieri. It's very close between him and Rafa Benitez, but I think Everton have had the opportunities to get rid of Benitez and they haven't taken them. Ranieri's we know they're a sacking club. I think he should be a stronger favourite. We did. Do you remember when we mentioned Eddie Howe, 40-1, he hadn't long got the job? He's into 14s now, obviously under a bit of pressure, but it's probably still a big game. I suppose if he loses to Ranieri, it all changes. But I think at the moment, I think Ranieri should be the favourite.
I think I'll go with Rafa on that one. It's really turgid at Everton, I must say. Let's go to Alistair. Alistair's a Villa fan, and he is livid with VAR. How do you think it's doing this season? Hopefully we'll be in agreement here, Mark. What's your opinion?
Well, I think it's doing better than it was, than, say, last season. I still don't like it. I prefer...
Is that a compliment?
No. But the question is, how is it doing this season? So I think it's doing better than it was last season. Let's take last night. You know, Tottenham could have scored 3 goals that were all incorrect. Yeah. So, I mean, it does work at times. And I think that it needs to be done sort of quicker if it can be. I think there needs to be more communication. I think that they're going to VAR less, which I like. I think that, you know, it should be for clear and obvious errors. I prefer not to have it, but I think it's doing better than it was last season. So, you know, if you think about that logically, maybe in 5, because it's not going. I don't care what anyone says, it's not going. Yeah, you know, if it's taking a big step forward this year, maybe, you know, in 5 years' time, we're at a position where we're not talking about it anymore and, you know, it's working well. So I think we are heading in the right direction. I'd just rather we went in a completely different direction in the first place.
Mark, any shouts to make England's World Cup squad? Mark previously tipped Dyer and it won. So thank you. Oh, there we go. Nice winning bet. That was good.
Yeah, and Ben White in the last Euros, which was a filthy winner because he wasn't in, and then he got in. Somebody got injured. Was it Trent?
Oh, yes.
Somebody
yeah,
got
that's
injured,
right.
And he managed to get in. The one here, Jared Bowen is 6-1 with Coral, and I think that is too big. Obviously, not yet in the England squad. It's nothing to do with the fact that he against Norwich last night, got a couple of goals. He's got the same shot-creating action numbers as Jack Grealish this season, and goal creating actions only Mohamed Salah has got more in the Premier League. So this is somebody that is absolutely, you know, ripping it up this campaign. I think from a kind of, you know, if you're on at 6-1, you'd prefer it if he maybe went to Liverpool, where he's been linked, because we know that there's a sort of big club sort of bias, and that Southgate, I think, ideally prefers them to play bigger teams. But he did have a midfield of, you know, Rice and Phillips, for instance, at the Euros, didn't he? That's West Ham and Leeds. So it's not like you can't get in. And, you know, Ben White made the squad and he was at Brighton. So even if he does stay at West Ham, I still think there's an opportunity. And in terms of who he could replace, I mean, Rashford, if you were picking an England squad now, Rashford would be nowhere near it. You know, Jadon Sancho couldn't be anywhere near it if he's not playing for Man United. Of course, there's absolutely ages to go. You've got the best part of a year. But I feel like with Bowen, he's just on the upgrade, getting better and better. Mm. And, you know, you don't want to be backing someone at even money in this market. You want them to be a big price. And, you know, at 6-1, I think he'll give you a good run.
And I think the pleasing thing as well, Mark, with Bowen is he's just so consistent. Like, I think it's there's very few attacking players at Premier League level who are just constantly sort of a 7, 8, 9 out of 10, and he feels like
versatile as well. Versatile,
incredibly.
He can play up front, which is why I think maybe the Liverpool links. You know, you can sort of see similarities with Jota, where he can play all across the front three.
Yeah, I really like Bowen. Tom, simple question, just puts the Patrick Kluivert night out. Now, I had a lot of, obviously, friends listening to the podcast, and this was the most questions I received last week. People messaging me, we need to hear about the Patrick Kluivert night out. Now, you teased it on last week's episode. So for those that haven't listened,
Jack. We're running out of time, Jack. I think we're going to have to do it next week. Let's do it next week. Let's do it next week.
You can't leave it on another cliffhanger, surely.
Look, yeah, I've got to check with Pat that it's okay that we talk about it first.
Are you really going to do this to us?
It needs a longer explanation. So
well, should we put it at the top of the running order next week?
Let's do it next week.
Okay. Maybe this is even more of a controversial question. Last one from David. If there were a public vote between the Kit Kat and a penguin, which would win?
I mean, the Kit Kat would absolutely thrash it, wouldn't it?
Do you think? Well, I mean, I think the controversial thing here is, a penguin a chocolate bar? I mean, I'd have it down as a biscuit.
Well, yeah, I mean, it could be, but I mean, you put it whatever bracket you want. It's not beating a Kit Kat, and in that sort of, I'm not a big fan of penguins. In that type of biscuit bar, chocolate bar, whatever, I much prefer a club. Give me a club any day over a penguin.
What club are we going? Mint, orange, raisin.
Well, not raisin. Orange is the standard one in our house. If we get the club, yeah.
Kit Kat chunky or the normal one?
I like both, but I mean, I'm going four finger Kit Kat if I can. Then probably the chunky, then the two finger.
Solid. There we go. All the important questions answered here on Mark Langdon's Bets Club this week. Thanks to all of you for listening in and getting involved on Twitter. It's at Racing Post Sport or at Mark Langdon if you want to get involved in future weeks. As always, Mark's put up a lot of selections on this podcast. Please don't feel the need to back them all. Only ever gamble with money you can afford to lose. We'll be back next week for another episode. Until then, stay safe. Take care of each other. Bye-bye.